For an inside look at the state's biggest footy league, it's the Monday Waffle.
Hello and welcome to the Monday Waffle. I am Connor Malice and joined by the one and only Jesse Donnelly-Jones. Jesse, how are we?
G'day, mate. Going okay. It's, look, I was a little bit flat after the grand final, I'll admit. I was barracking for Claremont, got a couple of connections.
Jesse, are you hearing that in the head? What is that sound?
Goodness.
It is a grand old flag, isn't it?
It's a high flying flag. It's the emblem.
Well, you had that one lined up, didn't you? not bad. Look, mate, as I was saying beforehand, I'll admit I was barracking for Claremont in that one. Got a couple of connections to the Tigers, so I was hoping they'd get up. But look, it was a ripping game, wasn't it? And look, I know you've been doing cartwheels ever since Saturday afternoon. Mate, you were out in a flash, weren't you, on Leaderville Oval? We were there together watching that game. You got a bit nervous in the fourth quarter there, mate. I was watching you sweat a little bit. 27 points up. Claremont get back to three. It was
27 degrees too.
come on.
Beautiful day
for
footy.
Could have been 18, mate. You would have been packing it.
Look, I was sweating all throughout. I mean, Claremont only kicking 5 points in that first quarter. I mean, both teams had 5 scoring opportunities in that first quarter. West Perth just managing to hold their nerves a little bit, I guess. And, yeah, I mean, all throughout, it was a close fight. I mean, scoring shot-wise, it was on par the whole game. Yep. If you're not, Claremont actually had the upper hand with the amount of set shots all the way up until that, up until the half.
Yeah, well, I mean, half time it was 10 scoring shots to 9. However, the Falcons are up by 9 points at that main break. But I mean, it was, like you said, it was just such a close game, and it was fantastic to have a good game of footy. I think, with all due respect to the Geelong Cats supporters out there, I mean, the AFL Grand Final, for us neutral supporters, it was a really average game to watch, wasn't it? So it was fantastic for the Waffle to turn it on. Beautiful weather at Leaderville Oval. 16,791 people crammed into Leaderville Oval, and it was just a ripping game of football. So it was fantastic, especially following the AFL Grand Final, which was disappointing unless you barrack for the Cats. So to have a great game of footy, and props to both teams as well. They both put on a great show.
Exactly, and even before getting to the grand final, I caught the train in, and just like how fluid it was, how easy it was just to walk from Leaderville Station all the way to Leaderville Oval. I mean, they had everything about it was amazing. They had food carts, they had activities for the kids. Everything was just thriving in Leaderville. We went in and went to get a drink just before the game as well, and that everything about that was just pumping and thriving, and it was just amazing.
Oh, it was just sensational, wasn't it? I mean, I was listening to 6PR on the way there, and you saw, you know, they had the whole coverage all day, and you know, they had their one of their sports reporters out on Oxford Street chatting to people in Footyville and just catching a glimpse of the action and chatting to all the Falcons and Tigers fans out there. And look, I mean, we got to walk back through Footyville after the game, didn't we, back to the train station, and that was my first time soaking it up. And even then, you know, post game, it was just still, it must have been about an hour since full time, and it was just absolutely buzzing all day, wasn't it? So and I mean, you can imagine that would have gone late into the night too. But I mean, we had a terrific spot. I mean, every spot in Leaderville seemed fantastic, but we were up there on the hill on the opposite side of the members stand there, and I mean, it was just absolutely chock-a-block. And I mean, being a NRL supporter myself, I sort of thought back to the NRL games you see in Sydney. I mean, that you see at Brookvale Oval, Shark Park in Cronulla, Leichhardt Oval, how they're all, you know, just jam-packed. And that's about 12, 13, 14,000 people. I mean, we had just under 17,000. So it was bigger than the crowds you get at those NRL games in Sydney. So it was just superb.
Yeah, and I really want the Waffle to really rethink going back to Optus Stadium. I mean, yeah. 16,000 at Leaderville, or let's say Steel Blue, Joondalup, HBF, all those places, even South Frio,
yep.
The atmosphere, just
Can't
electrifying.
You cannot beat it. just unbelievable. And I mean, think back to 2 years ago, back in 2020, South Fremantle versus Claremont, and now again in 2022. I mean, look, I think everyone barring the Waffle administrators want the games to be played at these local grounds, because obviously they're looking at through the green lens, mate, with the dollar signs. But look, I mean, at the end of the day, what you had at Leaderville and what you had at Fremantle 2 years ago beats a half-filled Optus every day of the week. Yeah. And I think the players prefer it too.
Exactly. Well, I mean, we had 16,000 there and it just felt crammed. It felt like you were just on top of the footy, just being there. And at Optus Stadium, at 60,000 empty seats, there's just no atmosphere.
Exactly right. And sort of, I mean, we were sitting in a very vocal part of the ground, and it was sort of a 50-50 mix, wasn't it, between the Falcons fans and the Tigers fans, but also the banter between both fan bases. You know, there was a bit of drawing back and forth. You know, you had some real characters up on the hill there, and it was just a fantastic place to be on the weekend, mate. It was just, I would love to see the Waffle, you know, or the WAFC for that matter, really rethink where they play the grand finals. Because I mean, even last week when we had a chat to Ben Edwards from Claremont, I mean, he said himself, on the back of playing in the 2020 grand final and now this one at Leaderville, that he'd prefer it to be at the local grounds too. So I think that probably indicative of what most players think.
Yeah, well, I think it should just go into a draw at the beginning of the year, just kind of go, all right, doesn't matter what South Freo's getting, it doesn't matter what is at the showgrounds, you know what I mean? Like, that's yep. Just the fairest way to do it. And it's just unbiased. And like, you know what, maybe putting a bid in, being like, okay, well, they do it in the World Cup, don't they, in soccer? They say,
yep,
oh,
sure,
we're going to do this, we want to do that. And it gives them the whole year to really prep. I mean, Leaderville, and props to them too, because we spoke about...
Mate, the city of Vincent,
yeah,
sensational.
That ground was just unbelievable. It was pristine, held up with three matches and everything like that, and we were concerned about it, but they just did a phenomenal job.
Exactly right too, mate. I mean, they copped a lot of heat, didn't they? I mean, ourselves included, we were saying, oh, this place is a mud pit. Back in July, how on earth are they going to get this up? And they did a superb job, mate. And also, just what you mentioned there about picking a neutral ground at the beginning of the season. I mean, I think that's a fair way to do it. And if it happens to be a particular team's home ground who makes the grand final, then so be it. I think, you know, you can imagine if, for example, next season, if they drew Bassendean out of a hat in February and then the Swans made the grand final, mate, imagine Steel Blue Oval in Bassendean if the Swans were in a grand final. That would just be ridiculous.
That's the whole point of it, you know what I mean? And regardless, if they didn't make the finals, that place would pack out anyway.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Just how great it was. I mean, I'm going to go back to the transport thing again, but I was on the Joondalup line heading back to Joondalup for the Falcons presentations, but then you were on your way back to...
Oh, mate, it was a quiet train ride. We had all the Tigers supporters on the old Fremantle line, mate, so it was a long train ride, wasn't it? But you did go to Arena Joondalup afterwards, didn't you?
Yeah, I sure did, and I mean, the fans were just singing the song the whole way down to Joondalup. May as well just made that train line just express to Joondalup, no stops. But yeah, absolutely fantastic. They had their ceremony there, food, drinks, everything like that. So, I mean, there was a lot of life members there. That was really, really great to see everyone back there and supporting West Perth. What was it, 2013, their last one that they've made it there. So almost a decade in the making. So
great day, great game of football, and you definitely give it a tick, don't you? So just absolutely superb.
Absolutely. I'm going to the game now, I guess. The most important thing that was there that day. Luke Meadows.
God, he turned it on, didn't he?
He did.
Absolutely sensational. He was everywhere, wasn't he? I mean, 20 disposals for the match. The way he stabilised the Falcons at some points of the game where Claremont were making a run. He also, he was going head-to-head a fair bit with Jai Bolton, as what we saw. Jai Bolton spent a bit more time in the middle this game as opposed to what we saw in that prelim against the Sharks. And look, that whole Falcons midfield, Shane Nelson, 22 disposals.
I reckon he could have almost been the next one. I mean, to have eight tackles and 23 disposals, he put in some hard yards. And I think in that last quarter, just watching the Falcons' desperation, you saw Aaron Black go for a huge dive, trying to smother the ball on the wing, didn't come off, but just that kind of desperation that the Falcons had, and it just showed the amount of pressure that it put on Claremont to kind of get rid of the ball quick, or we're not going to get rid of the ball at all.
It just seemed like every time Claremont were making a run, something would happen. Like, think back to when Claremont got it back to less than a kick. There's about, I think it was about 20 minutes into the fourth term, and they're on the breakaway through the middle, and they have a two-on-one inside the forward 50, and one of the Falcons backmen, I think it might have been Joseph Hinder, just uses his long arms and just gets a fist on it, intercepts Callan England, who, you know, was having that on his chest. And then they went back the other way, held it up there in that half for about 3-4 minutes, and then eventually got a soccer goal to stretch out to 12.
Yeah, but it just goes to show the desperation on both teams. There were some moments with Claremont, I was like, what are you guys doing? We saw a passage of play that saw Claremont just blitz through the guts, 40 out, on the run, and then kick it almost a 90 degree to the pocket. A shot on goal, mate.
Yeah, and that was such a fast transition play, wasn't it? And I think it was sort of indicative of Claremont sort of second-guessing themselves in that second half, because first quarter as well, I mean, they had the yips, didn't they, kicking 0-5. But
Bailey Rogers has the yips, didn't he? 1-3. We were there on the boundary side.
Well, yeah.
Next to some of his kicks, and some didn't even make the distance.
Yeah, and I mean, you'd normally back him in to get those kicks, wouldn't he? And they weren't just near misses. They were misses by a fair stretch. And I just think for Claremont, it was sort of, I thought they really lifted in that second half, but it was just sort of that first quarter, which, I mean, they were down by 15 at quarter time. It was 3-2 to 0-5. And they were slowly but surely nudging their way back, but it just seemed like West Perth were just one step ahead the entire game.
Especially in that, and you know, we always say it, you know, that third quarter is the premiership quarter, and West Perth just dominated it.
They did.
And that really set them up, you know. How much were they up at?
Got up by as much as 27 late in that third term, and Claremont kicked the last couple to peg it back to 14.
Yeah.
But that third term where they kicked 3 consecutive goals to stretch the lead out to 27, I mean, Claremont, props to them for coming back, but you could just tell just throughout that game that Claremont were on, but West Perth were just that little bit more slick around the football, that little bit more clean at ground level. They made the right decisions. They just, you could definitely tell that they had that little bit more experience than Claremont, which sort of paid dividends in the end.
And one thing I was almost going to say was Claremont almost seemed better for most of the match than West Perth.
Yeah, they did.
But what West Perth did was they just took care of those opportunities, made the most of those opportunities that were presented to them. We saw, and we touched on that just before, Claremont got the ball in their forward 50. I think in the second quarter, it was down there most of the match, or most of that quarter. And well, I'm sitting there, you know, shaking in my boots. But West Perth then rebounded out, and we've kicked goals that way. But Claremont just couldn't seem to get those scoring opportunities through.
You mentioned the opportunities there. Like Claremont, they had 9 more inside 50s for the match. I mean, you had
37 rebounds for West Perth to Claremont's 25.
Well, there you go. There's another one. So, I mean, it's sort of indicative of the fact that they did dominate the game for many parts. And, I mean, they had more of the football too. I mean, they were plus 45 in the disposal count. They had more hit-outs.
Almost double.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost double.
Exactly
51
right.
to 27.
Yeah, exactly right. So, I mean, you think about it, like, more inside 50s, more marks inside 50, more of the football, dominated the hitouts. I mean, those are all the statistics you need to win a game of football, isn't it? So, look, I think it's really disappointing for Claremont. They did so well to get to this point, but like you said, there were times there where they really could have put West Perth to the sword, whether it was second-guessing a decision close to goal or just missing that 5-metre hand pass or maybe just missing a tackle. Like, it was just those little things that cost them in the end.
It's a bit of that composure at the end of the day. I mean, not to say West Perth have made finals all throughout, but you know, when you have a lot of those blokes like Aaron Black and Shane Nelson who have been there before and they've done that, and just to have that experience in a grand final and to know how to handle yourself and know what it really means to be there and not have those yips that Claremont did have at the start. And you know what? I could say that, but Ben Edwards had a cracking match.
Yeah, he did. I thought he was really solid throughout the middle for them, wasn't he? I mean, he started on the bench, came on probably around that 7-8 minute mark. And there were times where Ben got the football where he would really take the game on through the middle, which I think is when Claremont sort of started to lift. I mean, because West Perth, they did kick the first couple of goals early in the match, and Claremont needed to be a bit more daring with their go forward. And I think he really did a good job setting the tone for them there. I mean, he finished with 21 disposals for the match. Missed a set shot on goal in that third term, but I thought it was a pretty solid effort from him. And then, you know, Jai Bolton, he was clearly Claremont's best player, 30 disposals for the match, spent a lot of time in the midfield. Declan Mountford, the skipper, 20 disposals, and Jack Bueller up forward with 20 disposals and one goal. He took 7 marks as well, so he was really presenting for them as well. But it was just, you look at West Perth, and I mean, because Claremont have such a young team, and then you look at the Falcons, and you look in their engine room, and you see Aaron Black, Shane Nelson,
Luke Meadows,
and you just think to yourself, I mean, these are blokes who have been around for 7, 8, 9 years, and two of those blokes, Nelson and Black, part of the 2013 team.
I think I touched on it last week too, where I said, you know, whoever sticks to that game plan, Claremont just seemed to have patches of that game plan that got them, that made them so successful. Claremont just weren't playing that run through the middle. As you said, Ben Edwards came on and tried to implement that game plan. But when the whole 22 players aren't sticking to that game plan, or they're just shying away because they don't want to be the one that messes up, that's when it all really starts to fall apart. And I mean, I think West Perth really took advantage of that.
We touched on this at quarter time. I mean, because obviously all the Falcons fans up and about, up by 15 points. But you and I had this conversation, you know, this game's even at the moment. I mean, it was 20 points to 5. West Perth are 2.5 goals ahead. But, we, you know, the football that we were watching, we were like, this is neck and neck. And so it wasn't really a surprise that, you know, Claremont were pegging it back time and time again. But it was just those missed opportunities.
Could have been
Claremont.
4-1 easily.
Oh, could have been.
It's
exactly phenomenal. Right. From about the 25-minute mark of the third term through to probably the last 3 to 4 minutes of that fourth quarter, Claremont were all over West Perth. You know, I really thought when they got it back to less than a kick midway through that fourth term, I thought they were going to win. I really did.
Yeah, and they were playing that phenomenal footy that we know them for. We saw that fantastic mark by Zach Gordagadin. I'm so sorry if I botched that name up, but my God.
That was sensational, wasn't it? That was an unbelievable mark, and it was at a critical time of the game too.
And it really swayed the pace, didn't it?
Yeah.
But I just remember sitting there, and like it was on the opposite side from us, and I just saw the ball, and I was like, "What's Zach doing?" Like he's about 5 meters behind the. Oh!
It was unbelievable, wasn't it? And I mean, every Falcons supporter, including yourself, of course, but every Falcons fan around us, straight up out of their seats. I mean, it was just, it was one of those incredible grand final moments, wasn't it? And also, it would be a sensational mark if it was 5 minutes in the game, but that was at a point in that fourth term where Claremont were coming home really strong. I think the margin was about 10 points at that point in time. They'd come out, kick the first goal of the fourth. You know, they seemed to be all over West Perth. So, you know, very underrated too in terms of the importance of the match.
Yeah, and like every coach, I'm going to say this, is saying when the motivation sways one way, you just need to make a big game play, whether that's, you know, getting a goal or just laying a chase down tackle. Mm. And it's just something to deflate your opposition to kind of really change the momentum. And at that stage, it was about 50-50.
It was, honest, wasn't it?
It was just rebounding each way. And then Zachy comes along, takes that mark, slows down the play. Oh. And then that's when West Perth managed to get up. So.
Oh, unbelievable, wasn't it? And I tell you what, how about the celebrations afterwards? I know you shot out there real quick. you and your brothers, you were well and truly amongst the scrum there when they picked up Darren Harris and the whole West Perth contingent just absolutely going off.
I honestly don't know what anyone over that PA system was thinking when they said, all right, no one to go out onto the ground until the podium set up. And it was it would almost reminded you of Lance Franklin kicking
it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Everyone bolted.
Gillon McLaughlin. All right, no one please go on the field. Like, we don't want that. Bugger that.
Yeah, I ran in straight away and then, just to be a part of that. And then managed to see Aaron Black.
Blackie,
he was kind of pulled off to the side with Shane Nelson, and I was just shrugging him. I was like, mate, what's going on? How are you feeling? And he's like, oh, he was a bit dazed and so in the moment. He kind of came to, realised that it was me, and he's like, oh, it was just unbelievable.
We also got a Monday Waffle exclusive, didn't we, with the premiership winning captain, which we'll be showing you later in the podcast before we have a chat to Blackie, but you managed to get one for us, mate.
Yeah, I sure did. Well, it's kind of funny when you listen to it because he doesn't really know it's me straight away. Because honestly, when you got about 5,000 people just surrounding you, just cheering and screaming, and you're caught up in the moment. You've been training so hard. It's been 9 years since your last flag. All he was saying to me all night was two, and it was I mean, to have two flags and to be a skipper for one of them is absolutely phenomenal.
It was sensational, wasn't it? That that grab that you got, which we will be sharing with you all later in the podcast, that was about a minute after the full-time siren, wasn't it? It was
straight off the bat.
Yep, and you can definitely tell too, because you can just hear the exhilaration, the relief as well in his voice that they got this done. And there was a lot of pressure on them too. I mean, they were the favourites going into this game, and you know, for them to hold their nerve, just, you know, I mean, because a lot of people on the back of Claremont's form these last couple of weeks were tipping them, myself included. So really gutsy performance by the Falcons.
Well, we were discussing this before, like all throughout the year, Claremont's just had the tip on them, you know what I mean? Yep. It was a close match, round one. Later on in the season, Claremont just absolutely tipped them off, and they've always matched up well for West Perth. So I feel as if I'm really happy that, well, obviously West Perth won, but I feel as if it was a Sharkies grand final or a Peel grand final, we wouldn't have had that excitement. Not to say that these boys might not have brought the same caliber as Claremont, but if history was repeating itself in that sense, that West Perth really matches up.
I think the fact that, yeah, to that point, Connor, I think it was the fact that they were playing the one team who did have the wood over them this season, because obviously West Perth...
Twice. Yes, two out of
exactly
the four losses
right.
coming.
Exactly right. So, you know, the fact that, I mean, it's one thing to play East Fremantle, who are second on the ladder, or maybe the reigning premiers, or, you know, maybe a team who's made the last three grand finals, such as South Fremantle, but to come up against a team who did have your number when no one else in the league did, there was a lot of pressure on them for sure. But also, worth mentioning too, the West Perth coach, Darren Harris, former Claremont coach back in 2020, was sensationally sacked following that three-point loss to South Fremantle in that grand final. A lot of people, including myself, viewed it as a rather unfair move at the time. And I tell you what a way to just have the final laugh, eh?
Yeah, and like you can definitely see he was holding his tongue presentations. Yep.
He would have loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Having some words to him afterwards at the West Perth, he wasn't so held with his tongue. But imagine getting traded or booted out of someone else's team, come back, you know, you pick up a head coaching job somewhere else and you verse him in the finals and you get over him after, you know, you've been defeated twice during the season. And, yep. Claremont's like, oh, well, we got you. And then at the most important stage, get over them.
Yeah, and I mean, that photo, which is sort of, it's going to go down in West Australian football folklore, isn't it? The picture of Darren Harris being lifted by the crowd and both his arms in the air, clenched fists, and, you know, all the West Perth fans, you know, thousands of them surrounding, just, you know, cheering. It was just a sensational image, wasn't it? And that's one that's going to be shown for decades to come.
Yeah, well, I was fortunate enough
and you
to
were
be
right
in the
there.
Crowd.
You
yeah,
were right
so I've
there.
Got a nice
yep.
mental picture of that. I mean, sun was just about setting too. It was just a beautiful moment.
Looks even better in black and white too. I've seen a black and white photo of that with the sun set across. Like, it's a fantastic image, mate. Fantastic image.
As you were saying, Jesse, absolutely amazing year for footy and for Waffle. Really glad. I mean, I was a fan of Waffle before this, but especially with this podcast being the last one, you've just learned so much and have a real appreciation across the board for how great Waffle footy is. And to see 16,000 fans, kids running around, even seeing the young youths and the Colts and the Rezzies and all that. I mean, props to all the teams that won. Subiaco took out the Rezzies. Pillar Thunder had a cracking match against the West Perth Colts. West Perth managing to take out one out of the three that were in there. But all those grand finals were decided within a kick.
It was Waffle football at its best. You know, to be at the ground on Saturday at Leaderville Oval, I think it's shown just how much West Aussies love their state league footy. I mean, I'm personally, obviously, you know, might be a bit biased here, but I think our state league is as strong as any state league in this country, if not the strongest. And I just think to see just under 17,000 people at Leaderville Oval for that grand final, you've seen the coverage leading up to the game during the week on the news, in the papers, talking about it on radio. It was just a sensational week, wasn't it? And a real celebration of WA football. And, you know, like you mentioned, you know, we saw all ages at that game, saw the old heads who have loved their waffle footy for decades. We saw younger people. We saw people our age who are in our 20s or maybe 30s. Like, just, it was a sensational showing of just how much support there is for state footy here in WA. So,
and not even just the regular punters. We saw Benny Cousins there.
Yep, Ben Cousins. Basil Zemplis was there in his West Perth scarf. And,
well, absolutely had to be there, didn't he?
Adrian Barrich too, he was there at the game. Like, it was just, I mean, we saw a couple of, we walked past a couple of the Eagles boys, didn't we? Jack Waterman, Mark Lacrosse.
Yeah, so that's right.
It was, I mean, people just loved it, mate. They just loved going to the local ground, watching some good waffle footy. Like, it was sensational.
Blake Akers was there too.
Blake Akers, yeah.
I mean,
he
he's ducking
before
off.
He heads off.
Yeah, poor bloke.
But look, couldn't have ended the season on a better note in terms of the atmosphere and, you know, the buzz around town. And I think it's going to carry the momentum into next season. And it's just, I think it's shown, it's just reaffirmed how much support there is in WA for the waffle and how much people love watching their waffle teams play, how much they love watching the footy. So I think it couldn't have ended on a better note, mate.
Exactly it. And I mean, heading into next year, you just don't know. I mean, we thought Subi at the beginning of the year would make it back. And you know what? I would really be surprised if we don't see Claremont back.
Oh, mate, I'm definitely backing Claremont. We'll certainly be in the top five next year. I think they'll still be top three next season. I can't see anyone really knocking them off that top three mantle. I mean, they're such a young group still. You think about how young they were back in 2020. Well, they still got a young group now, and they'll learn from this experience. And it's two grand final losses, which are obviously tough to take, but they're grand final losses where they played good footy. And it was just a couple of things here and there. And they've played good footy. They've just been beaten by teams who are just that little bit better on the day. And, you know, I expect them to be back next season.
And you know what? I was speaking to Blackie, like, when we were down at the West Perth function as well. And him just saying, like, this grand final prep compared to the 2018 one where they were taking on Subiaco, you know, he was saying the night before, he was like, oh, in the back of his mind, he'd be like, oh, this is going to be so fantastic if we did win the grand final. But Subiaco on that run,
yep,
on that period, and they lost. I mean, they came out and lost by 60 points. But he just said, you know, the mindset was just different this year. There was actually that glimmer of hope. You know, they're not going, it's not a David and Goliath moment. It's a very evenly matched where they are actually coming out and really wanting to set that tone where they're on top now and they're the ones that need to really set that bar. And you know what? They came out firing too.
Yeah, and you think back to that Subiaco team that they played in 2018. I mean, that's one of the greatest teams of all time, isn't it, in the history of the waffle. And you think of the run that Subiaco have had from probably around 2014 to 2021. I mean, 2018 was probably when they were at their strongest. It was probably their best season. And I mean, West Perth, they were an up-and-coming group at that point. Obviously, there'd been a bit of turnover with their list at that point, in contrast to the squad that won that flag back in 2013. And I think, you know, they took a lot of lessons out of that game against Subiaco, as, you know, demoralising as it might have been, because obviously they did get flogged and the game was over before half-time. But, you know, they've been in contention, made finals the following year back in 2019, lost a close game to West Coast when Brady Gray kicked that late goal right in the thick of it again last year. So, and then to win the flag this year, I mean, they've just been a sensational team for the last decade.
And now they have that depth too.
Yep.
All the way through to all the way down to the Colts.
Yeah, exactly right. You think of Subiaco when they had all three teams in it back in 2018 and how that carried through for the next three seasons. Well, I think West Perth are well placed for the next three, four, 5 years.
And that's not to say that Subiaco can't come out firing next year. I mean, they might have just wanted to keep their Rezzy's team, which made the flag and won it by 6 points. It wasn't yet six points. One of my mates, unfortunately, didn't make it into there. Shout out to Matty Hatch. Didn't make it into the team, but he was down there supporting his mate. So props to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And yeah, just having that depth now that they might be able to rebuild, maybe send some of their older boys down to that Rezzy's team, coach those boys up to then, when they make it into the league team, understand what it's like to really have that kind of opportunity.
It's funny looking back, you know, every week when we did this podcast for about the first 2 months of the season. We were saying, oh, you know, Subi, they'll get their act together, they'll make finals. And they never did. And I just think that speaks volumes to how much these other teams have lifted the standard this season, and the way that Subiaco sort of struggled to get off the mark. And you look at East Fremantle catching everyone off guard. I mean, who would have pictured them making finals, let alone finishing second on the ladder, getting to a home prelim? South Fremantle had a good season, but they did struggle at times because other clubs were making that leap, like the Sharks, like the Tigers, even the Swan Districts. I mean, how about Swan Districts? They had some great wins. They knocked off Claremont twice. They knocked off West Perth in Bassendean in a must-win game in that second last week of the season.
You know, unfortunate to get out of the finals, to not make it the finals.
Yeah,
the
exactly right. And I mean, they knocked off South Fremantle too at Fremantle Oval. You know, East Perth, they had a strong start to the season, lagged off a little bit at the end. Fingers crossed things improve for the Demons and the Eagles to kick off next season. And again, you know, Peel Thunder, they've just always been around that mark, haven't they? Ever since they made that affiliation with the Dockers, they've had some stronger football teams. And, you know, the upset win over South Fremantle.
One person doesn't make a team, but to lose Jake Florenka is that almost big, be like the equivalent of Claremont to lose Jai Bolton. Yes, there's other great football players. Hayden Sloyth, he pulled really well in the Sandover. But, I mean, just to have that impact player, just that leader out on the field, it's just a tough loss. And you know what? I said maybe they won't make it any further, but they pulled off some great wins and they had a phenomenal season. And I think that experience without Florenka might be handy. But geez, would it be great for Florenka to make a real nice comeback next season.
Standing here with fucking Shane Nelson, I couldn't have done it without any of the boys. We had a goal at the start of the year to do it. It's fucking unbelievable. Sorry.
Joining us now is a two-time premiership player, Aaron Black. Aaron, how are you feeling, mate?
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Mate, it's great. It's nice to hear a two-time premiership player, put it that way. I think when I saw you on the ground yesterday, Connor, still Sunday today, is it?
I haven't slept since Sunday.
Yeah. I didn't even recognise it was you, so it was a bit of emotion and shock, I guess, about becoming a two-time premiership player. But yeah, it's pretty cool, and it's been really enjoyable till now.
Now, it goes without saying, Aaron, that you've played absolutely phenomenally. We said earlier on in the podcast that, you know, in that third and fourth quarter, just your desperation trying to get those smothers on the board, even if it didn't pay off, you were just diving for it. And, you know, just an absolute credit to you and your teammate on that desperation in that fourth quarter. What really, where did that gut running come from?
I guess, like, for me personally, my role changed a little bit this year, full stop. So, you know, one of my major focus points during the week against Claremont, the way that they like to play, coming off a six-day break, you know, they played 2 weeks in a row in the heat. You know, my focus points for the playing group was to be really physical, something that I really enjoy about playing footy in itself. So I just really wanted to set the example of being physical, and it's how important this game is. Sometimes you've got to do things that, you know, put yourself in a bit of harm's way as well. So, yeah, look, I just saw opportunities to take body and ball, and that was my focus for most of the day. And I think all the boys, you know, jumped on board, and it showed. We had 93 tackles, and, you know, there were countless numbers of smothers, and that's been a pretty key stat for us when we win games of footy.
G'day, Aaron. Congratulations, mate. Outstanding season by you blokes. How were the nerves in that fourth quarter, particularly when Claremont was sort of making a run late, being up by 27 points late in that third term, and the Tigers get it back to less than a kick? How were the nerves settling at that point?
Well, look, interesting question. I actually didn't, like, personally, and they probably would have felt otherwise, but, you know, I didn't feel like we were actually going to lose the game. I thought, you know, they had their opportunities to probably take it from us. And in those moments where they had those chances, we felt really comfortable. You know, Dean runs back with the flight and cuts on off, and You know, Grid takes that mark when they're in transition. You know, things like that.
How big was that moment, Aaron? Sorry to cut you off there, but how big was that moment in the changing of the tide, I guess?
What? Grid's mark, yeah, or Muncy running back?
Both, I guess.
Oh, mate, they're both massive. I think when Grid took his mark, I think it was a 4-point game. There's that AF 10 minutes left or 8 minutes left or something like that. So there's still a bit of time left in the game. And Munsey cut one off a little bit later, and it was, you know, again, a 4-point game, and they had someone standing in the goal square. It's a regulation set shot from a mark. So I think that one was massive. That was right before the end of the siren. We ended up soccering the ball outside 50, and I think we just lock it down from there, and the siren goes like 30 seconds later. So, yeah, look, both massive, but there's always little moments in finals, in grand finals, you know, that you just kind of notice and pick up, and all those little moments add up to why you win a game of footy. And I wouldn't necessarily say we're nervous, because we're obviously entrenched in a game of footy, and it didn't feel like we were going to lose. But yeah, we just kept finding a way to grind it out, and that's what happened. We got lucky and got a win.
Was this premiership made a bit more special, Aaron, by the fact that, you know, you had fallen short against Subiaco back in 2018, and, you know, you've had a group of blokes together for the last 4 or 5 years who have been around that mark but just haven't been able to get over the hump, but now you've sort of got the monkey off the back, so to speak?
Yeah, oh, look, anytime you play finals footy, you think you can win a flag. You know, I think I've played finals footy 10 or 11 times out of my 12 years or something like that, and obviously losing the two. And we were never really in those ones against Subiaco, which is really disappointing. You know, you do all the hard work to get there, and to lose, you know, quite heavily is never ideal. So I think, you know, it was obviously good to come away with a win, but just have the feeling during the few weeks that, you know, we have a real shot at winning this. It wasn't a a tough run home, or we'd have fought to week in, week out to get to the grand final. We kind of set ourselves up for success by finishing on top and then winning our first final. So it's a little bit of a different feeling when you're the older bloke and the captain, one of the captains of the club. I guess it, you kind of feel a bit more like a proud father, or you get to watch, you know, all the young fellas win their first one, and that makes it that much more enjoyable as well.
Just to run off Jesse's question there, Aaron, which one was better, 2013 or this one?
I don't know if I'll say either one of them was better. They were both amazing for different reasons. But, I mean, the first one, you know, me and Nelly was 19 and I was 20. You know, we were kids, and we were the underdog. You know, I think we were paying like $3.60 or something, and East Perth had a lot of Eagles-aligned guys, and we really just put them to the sword early. That one's a bit more of a blur. I think this one, saying that I'm a premiership captain, you know, probably holds a little bit more weight to winning, and having to wait 9 years to actually get the opportunity to hold the cup up. It probably does make it a little bit more special, but they were both amazing.
Do you also think that, you know, obviously you were so young, you and Nelly both, when you won it in your first few seasons within the waffle, that, you know, you went almost 10 years without it. How does that resonate with you?
Well, I think it kind of just says to the boys at the footy club, says to the footy club how hard they are to win. You know, I guess anytime there's so many players who play footy and they never get an opportunity. And, you know, to go 10 years between or 9 years between winning them, it just kind of, you know, makes you not take it for granted the second time and really enjoy it. Hence, you know, I sound the way I do, and my brain cells are firing the way they are.
How happy were you for your coach there, Aaron? Darren Harris, formerly with the Claremont Tigers, got given a bit of a raw deal probably after that 2020 grand final. How wrapped were you for him to sort of see him, you know, especially getting lifted up by the fans after the game, having thousands of people cheering and really getting to soak up that moment?
Oh, mate. Look, again, I'm wrapped, you know, for everyone who was involved with this. Dan's obviously had a difficult road the last couple of years with being there, and you know, I'm not exactly privy to how everything kind of happened. But, you know, for him to go away, and he came straight down to the footy club, you know, to help us out, because Jeff Valentine, who's one of his very good friends, was coaching us at the time. It was a massive part in us building the culture that we have now. You know, Harrow was down with us, you know, straight after that happened, and was helping us, you know, build our kind of culture here. So he's been a part of our journey along with Joff for, you know, longer than maybe people may realise. But yeah, it was really cool to have, I know the fans weren't supposed to be on the ground, but if it was at Optus, that wouldn't have happened at all, because you obviously, I think you get $50,000 fines and all that kind of rubbish. So to have that real old school 70s, 80s vibe where, you know, you get a couple thousand people on the ground and everyone just swarms you and they lifting you in the air and throwing you in the air. And yeah, it was actually a really cool kind of experience to have when you win.
Aaron, just before we let you go, mate, do you guys reckon you can do it again in 23?
Why not? I think we'll have a lot of guys come back. We'll have a lot of guys, you know, move on as well, and that's a part of footy. You know, I think we've been building a really good culture, as I said before, and we've got the ability for guys to come in and out of the side and play a role. You know, I use myself for an example. I chose to buy in and play a role for our footy club to win, which is not my normal role. And, you know, we get Joe Hinder come in, plays his third game, plays his role, plays outstandingly well. We get Corey Rundle, kicks the first two goals of the game on Jai Bolton. And, you know, he's only played two games. So we've got so many guys who are just willing to play their role and come in when they get the opportunity, and playing your role is enough. So I think that's going to set us up for success. And if we can keep piecing it together as we go next year, I don't see why we can't keep winning another one and a few more, if that be the case.
That was Aaron Black there, one of the co-captains of West Perth, and now Premiership captain.
Two-time Premiership player.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much for joining us, Aaron. Best of luck next year.
Beautiful. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Congratulations, mate.
Look, I know we had no clue about East Frio making a pop, but do you see any underdog team really making a strive next year?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think one team that really has the capabilities is East Perth. I think they finished 6-12, which is not a great record to have. But I just think, obviously, Hamish Brayshaw, he had an outstanding season.
Unlucky not to get that, Sandoval.
Oh, got close, didn't he? 23 votes.
But... And go back to your point where he said, look, we just didn't win the last two games. I don't think I'll make these votes up. And you know what? That's probably the same thing that had happened to Jesse Turner, where they just didn't win enough for him to actually warrant three or two or even one vote in these matches, where I don't really necessarily... I'm a huge fan of... Doesn't matter if the winning team wins or how bad the loss was for the other team. But if that player was a standout on the team on that game, give him the votes.
Yep.
You're trying to do the best player on the field, not the best player from the best team.
Yeah, exactly right too. And I mean, you never know what's going on in the umpires' heads, do you? But I would give Swan Districts more of a chance to really shake up the competition next year than I probably would with East Perth. But I mean, I think those two teams, the Swans and the Royals, I think they're two clubs who can really make that leap next season. I think the Swan Districts could have a East Fremantle type of season next year. I think they have all the pieces in place. And I mean, as for East Perth, I think they have the capabilities of getting into that top five next year. So I think it's going to be an absolute ripping season. But I'll flip it to you, mate. Who do you reckon's a team who can
Don't think the Eagles can steady their ship until their AFL teams really steadied back. But, you know, they were riddled with COVID and injuries so at the beginning of the year, and they never really quite corrected after that. So fingers crossed they can be able to do that and really develop those younger boys from there. I reckon Subi's going to make a comeback next year. Yep. I reckon they're going to look into their resi side. Did very well, made the grand final. Maybe that's something they may have led towards at the maybe halfway mark. They're like, well, league team's not doing that great, may as well Rezzy's doing well. Do we want to pick out of that to then try and make finals this way? Or did they just put all their eggs in one basket? I don't know. I'm just kind of dribbling on a bit here, Jesse. But look, I reckon with the talent that they have beneath them and the depth as well, I reckon they have a fair crack to make it next year into those final series.
Yeah, well, I mean, you think back to 2020 when they missed the finals, everyone says, oh, you know, they're running on old legs now. They brought a couple more recruits in. They brought a couple of boys up from the Colts level. And what do? They go out and win another premiership, thump South Fremantle in the grand final in 2021. So, I mean, they definitely have the capability next year. And Perth, they have a really young squad. I mean, 3 wins this year, struggled this season, wasn't a great year for them. But you can see that the talent's there. And it's just, I think next year is going to be an absolute ripper. I mean, I've absolutely loved this season. And before we wrap up shortly, mate, one thing I will ask you, like, you know, what's been your grand final aside, of course, what's been like a favourite moment for you this season? Because there's been a lot of memorable moments.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a tough one, really, isn't it? There's just been, I wouldn't say a moment, but I think week to week, just having some fantastic football all the way throughout. There wasn't a period where you're like, oh, well, West Perth's just dominating the league, aren't they? Or East Frio's just taking the world by storm, which they did. But, you know, they're not, no one's getting thumped. I mean, besides the bottom half, but even Peel and Swannies, and even East Perth provided some really good matches. And I just think that that was phenomenal. And that's one thing we really wanted at the start of the year. We always knew that there would be the Eagles and unfortunately Perth, but they're just rebuilding. Like, understandable. Great that they still kept at it and still provided. Eagles, even at some points, really provided some competition to some of the higher end teams, which, to their credit, they could have easily went, well, I don't really want to play anymore. We'll just be out there kicking a footy on a Saturday arvo and then just go down to the pub afterwards. But they really, really tried to give it a crack.
Yeah, they did. And I think every team at some point this season has, whether you're a team at the top of the ladder like West Perth and Claremont, or if you have been at that bottom of the ladder such as the Eagles or Demons, like, every team has had their moments throughout the season. I mean, myself personally, if I was to look back at a particular game, I think the Peel Thunder Subiaco match at Leaderville Oval early on in the season, Nat Fyfe making his comeback. The Hill was pretty packed at Leaderville that day too, not to the level of the grand final, but
he managed to get a point.
He managed to get a Sandover vote, didn't he? I tell you what, he looked a bit scratchy, didn't he? I don't know how he managed to get that one. The umpires might have been a bit starstruck there, but
yeah, he was a bit rusty. Wasn't he?
I think it. I think that was a moment for me. And it was a ripping game of football too. Peel Thunder getting on top by 6 points. And Subiaco really giving Fyfe a run for his money in that game too, which was ideal for him, you know, trying to crack into the Frio squad again. So
was it Tom that was telling us, or it might have been one of my mates, some of the Frio boys were putting burly footies in Nat Fyfe's locker
that's
before
true.
His round. So
yeah, that
that's a kind of great banter, that. Yeah. And he took it quite well.
It was great banter, wasn't it? And he really embraced that week too, you know, getting back down to Peel and playing with those blokes. And, you know, you could tell he just loved being out in the field. And, yeah, fans running onto Leaderville Oval again after that match.
And he might have just missed. And that's one thing about the Waffle that you don't really, that separates itself from the AFL, is you're just so separated from the fans in the AFL.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the Waffle, the boys are all down there around your huddle. They're listening. They want to know that round. There's the presence of the fans there. And so it's such an intimate game that the AFL just lacks.
Yep, exactly right. So it's just, I think the fan engagement this year has been as good as it's ever been. And yeah, mate, just absolute ripping season. And bring on 2023, mate. I mean, who knows what's going to happen? Who's going to make a leap? Can West Perth go back-to-back? Is it the year of the Shark? Do the Tigers finally get
Find
over the hump? Who knows? But look, mate, I've absolutely loved this season, and I've loved doing the podcast with yourself and Tom every week, mate. It's been lots of fun. And, you know, thanks to our listeners as well. I mean, it's just, you know, who tune in and have a listen each week. And, you know, I've just, really loved doing it with you, mate. And glad we got to head down to the grand final too, mate. It was an absolute ripping day,
wasn't
it?
Yeah, finally made a match there together, didn't we, Jesse? Yeah, just to touch on what you said as well, mate. It's been absolutely fantastic. And, you know, it wouldn't have been the same without you, yourself, and Tom bringing the insight. It was just great that we had such a diverse fan base within our little podcast.
I love that we were unashamedly biased towards each of our teams, weren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And you guys just never gave West Perth a chance the whole season. So maybe next year, just don't count them in and that would be two flags back to back. But I guess on behalf of myself and Jesse Donnelly-Jones, thank you so much for the year. We'll pass you over to the next broadcasting students that want to tackle this. Best of luck to them. Thank you for joining us. It's been a beautiful year for the Waffle in 2022, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Monday Waffle, proudly brought to you by the students from ECU Broadcasting.